for Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 22nd of April. An absolute gut punch, emotionally wrecking, a depressed Easter Sunday. Plus, amazing effort, incredible comments from Kyle Korver, some big picture thoughts, and a tip of the hat to the fans. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, some geeky numbers as well, and hopefully improving your time as a Jazz fan. Hope you're doing all right today. I don't think you're doing great. We shouldn't have sports impact us that way, but Saturday night was a gut punch. A team you love, gave its heart and soul, everything you needed to have go your way, and then they lost. A lot of tears Saturday night. My daughter, evidently, she was in San Diego, and my wife tells me that somewhere shed there. I ended up coming home and I just stared at the computer for like 2 hours, not wanting to go to bed, because somehow I think in my mind, if I didn't go to bed, it couldn't be true. If I woke up the next morning, it made it true. It is. We're down 3-0 to the Rockets, and they got us. By the way, this show is available on Himalaya, the new app that's out there for you. I got right into it today. It's kind of how I feel. As well as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. Tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Jazz. Today's show, I try to set up. We're going to hit on that, run through the game. A little bit of why we lost or things we can improve from. Some big picture thoughts, and then I thought there were obviously I haven't heard Kyle Korver on Donovan Mitchell. You want to hear it again. So we'll sneak that in. Some interesting comments out of the locker room from the Rockets about the atmosphere, and we'll touch on game five. So I think that's at least the plan. I don't know how long these things are going to go. But that was an amazing effort. It was everything we wanted to see out of the team. They came out, they gave it the kind of the juice that's been lacking. As I had said earlier in the week, I'm not one of these usually like, oh, just play harder kind of guys. But in this case, I do think they something happened, to these guys in game one and two of this series where either they started thinking too much or they got a little intimidated or they lacked the confidence on the, confidence in the tee box, you don't swing it very well. And they lost their gusto. They came out, they got the start, they got the 8-point lead early, 8-0. It's the first team in this series and now, 8 games, and the team that took the lead in the first quarter didn't win the game. It was really a night in which, frankly, the Jazz got everything you need. They got great effort. The defense was elite. They slowed down Harden. They were fabulous. The arena, which we'll touch on, was electric. It was incredible to try to call a game in that crowd. And, one of the things I've been saying this whole series was you just can't ask the defense to put out the type of performance that's needed to catch up with our offensive struggles. And they almost did it. I mean, they almost did it. And that, to me, was probably the most impressive part. The Rockets' offensive rating the other night was their 74th best offensive performance. I mean, so Milwaukee has them, one of their worst was against Milwaukee. This was the Jazz kind of getting them again. December 6th is their 80, they've played 80, 5 games. They're 84th of the season, so their second worst is against the Jazz. Their 81st is against the Jazz, and that was their 74th. So we went back and played defense, and Rudy had an enormous impact, and we got him. The problem is simply that we continue to not be good enough offensively to win these games. I mean, The defense did something that's – the defense held them 13 points below their regular average. It's really – it's an incredible effort and job done. And then – but there wasn't – I mean, obviously there's not – if you lose, you didn't have enough offense. But that's kind of been the point all week. It was our best offensive game of the series, and it's still – you just – you know, the Rockets are having their best defensive games they've had all year. Third, 10th, and 21st best. The Jazz are just not really broken through a point of possession yet. A lot of it is just the inability to make shots. The Jazz are 20 of 85, 24% on catch and shoot 3-point shots. Their regular, the league average is 36.5. The Jazz were right at that, 36.7. The Rockets were a little better at 35.7. And the Jazz are at 23.5. Donovan's 5 of 16. Jay Crowder is 2 of 13. Royce O'Neal is 4 of 12, which is the best of the group, but his season average is 40%. Joe Ingles is 2 of 12. Season average was 40. Rubio's 2 of 8. Niang's 2 of 7. Korver's 2 of 6. Tabo's 1 of 5. The other thing is just the wide open looks. This is truly incredible. The Jazz are 12 of 64 on wide open 3-point shots. No defender within 6 feet, according to StatsView. League average is 38%. Jazz is 38.6. Jazz get the most in the NBA. And the Jazz are 19% in the series on wide open defenders not within 6 feet threes. I mean, you get into no defender within 4 feet, and it gets even more drastic. But the Jazz, Rubio's 2 of 7. Some of these things are stunning, and some maybe shouldn't be as stunning. And the reason I say that is if you kind of dig in a little bit and look at the end of the season, you know, Rubio never got going in the second half of the year. He was 12 of his last 45 on wide open threes. It's a little, about 25%. He's 2 of 7. So that's continued. Royce O'Neal's 3 of 11. You know, you can jump on that, but it's really, he's, you know, that means he's missed like one shot. Ingles, surprising, 42% during the season. Great in the second half. 2 of 12 on wide open threes. Donovan's 1 of 8. Donovan was hitting. Donovan's first half, second half change, frankly, is he hit wide open shots. He was 77 of his last 156. Niang's 2 of 7. Crowder's 0 of 6. That one, unfortunately, stems back. He's now, you know, 33 of his last 113 on wide open threes. He closed the year 33 of 107. So, you know, 33 of your last, he's 29% on wide open threes right now. Tabo 1 of 4, Favors 0 of 2, Korver 1 for 3. And there are other items probably. And what jumps out to me there, by the way, is the easy answer would be, oh, well, they're giving certain guys looks. Didn't feel like it there. Right? I mean, so Ingles is taking the most shots. That can't be who they want. O'Neal's taking the second most. He's a 40% shooter. He's not, you know, there's an interesting, I can't remember his first name, Prada, who does some good work for SB Nation. Kind of had a whole theory about, the difference between a high percentage shooter and a good shooter. And I think that's probably fair. I'm not sure how many of our guys are really, you know, knockdown shooters as much as they're rhythm shooters, and the rhythm must be broken. It's kind of crazy. And it's a bummer. There are some areas, beyond open shots I want to touch on, and then a big picture thought I had last night while watching OKC lose, which is just a wonderful thing to watch. Today's show is brought to you in part by Murdoch Chevy. Have you heard that the Blazer is back? Yeah, no, the Chevy Blazer is back. They have an incredible lineup of SUVs right now. The 2019 Chevy Blazer, it's really sweet. If you get a chance, they're calling it a midsize SUV crossover. Okay? Whatever. You kind of can figure out what that means. Starts at about $28,000. They're really good looking. They look fun. They exude fun. But the whole SUV lineup that the Chevy has going right now is pretty terrific. You've got the Trax, the Equinox, which I drove recently and really enjoyed it. That's the four-door SUV, two rows of seats, quiet, good power, really well made. I thought the touchscreen was really easy to deal with, which tells me they've taken the effort to put in the extra time. Then there's the Blazer. Then there's the Traverse, which has the three rows of seats and all the cool cameras and some really cool stuff. And then the big boys, the Tahoe and the Suburban that you know so well from Chevy. It's all out at Murdoch Chevy out in Woods Cross. They're also located in Logan. Stop by, say hi to Tyson, who's out there. Tyson's looking good. He's lost some weight. He's kicking butt, looking like a lean, mean fighting machine. Good guys out there. Stop by, see what Murdoch can do. They've been with you for 90 years in Utah. You get the Murdoch guarantee of a no-regrets experience when you are there. That's Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross. Today's show is also brought to you by my friends over at Iron Gate Global Advisors. Spencer Nelson, former Utah State Aggie, is working with them as he's worked into his now real-life career. And he tells us about one of his partners. I want to tell you about Iron Gate Global Advisors, a financial group out of Salt Lake City, small shop that understands your journey, aren't pushing products on you, and have a strategy, direction, and process. I found out about them from Spencer Nelson, former Utah State grad, who, by the way, has an MBA, accounting and finance background degrees, and worked Wall Street and private equity. And he tells me about the personnel. Brian is the chief investment officer.
Brian's a long-term investor, Warren Buffett disciple with a proven track record of active management. He views investing as not trading stocks, but buying pieces of businesses that he believes in. He's focused on not getting caught up in what's hot today or tomorrow, but doing the research, looking 1, 3, 5, even 10 years out with a very patient, methodical approach.
Couple that with Brett and his longtime options background, and you have a versatile group. It's Iron Gate Global Advisors.
To find out more about Iron Gate Financial, give Spencer a call, 888-591-0334. That's 888-591-0334, or email him at spencer@igga.com. Anytime we're talking investing, understand that past performance isn't indicative of future results. Also, options may not be for everyone. They have different risks. Make sure you consult a professional before doing anything with them. Do your due diligence. The Jazz were incredible in Game 3 and gut-wrenching to lose that game. At the same time, I thought I saw a team that is not quite ready to beat a championship-caliber team. And whether it's experience, or whether it's, just Chris Paul and Eric Gordon and James Harden touched it last year, and now they're playing. Ricky Rubio talked about it before the game, but they're playing with this intensity level and this focused every possession. I thought we lacked that. The most obvious example is the Royce O'Neal to Donovan Mitchell alley-oop attempt. I mean, it's just a terrible idea. If you have to have watched the game exactly. Let me see if I can set the scene for you. But it's there's about 3 minutes left would be my memory on it. And the Jazz, I think about 3:15 left. It's a 91-90 game, if my memory is holding here, which is not usually great, but I think that's right. And the Jazz have a fast break opportunity, and they try to throw an alley-oop. Like, come on. Like, you can't. It's two second-year players caught in the moment, not aware of the magnitude. It's very symbolic. it's very, very symbolic of, and we're going to, you're going to end up hearing it here in a second, because I'm going to rewatch it and walk through it. I mean, I think it's just really, it's one of those plays that I think shows 3:15 left, Gobert rebounds. And I think you'll hear it in the background. Oh, the video's not working because NBA.com has not had its video work all week, which has been really annoying. So that's one. The final rebound. You know, P.J. Tucker just understood the magnitude of the moment when James Harden, in a 101-99 game, gets the rebound. Like, Joe gets moved out of the way. Like, that's P.J. Tucker, having been there, as Mike D'Antoni said, played in NBA Finals last year and then had to correct himself. Those are plays that I don't know whether the Jazz could have avoided having Rubio switched on to Harden. I thought it was interesting, by the way, that the Rockets were switching Rubio on to Harden on every play late in the game, and that's the guy that we started the series wanting to guard Harden. Like, our theory was that Rubio's presence in this series was going to have an impact on the series and to in a positive manner against Harden. They're switching Ricky onto Harden. That's the guy they want on every possession. You know, I'm not a big turnover guy, but the Donovan commits the turnover that gets Harden going. Right? Like, Harden dunks it with 7:34 left for his first field goal of the night. An incredible accomplishment from the Jazz. An incredible accomplishment. Off a steal, Donovan gets a steal and then forces another pass ahead. Capella steals it back. Harden gets the leak out for the dunk to make it 86-83. Harden has his first field goal. He now hits a step back three on the next possession. Turns it over, but gets going. Minor things. There's an Eric Gordon three that was just really bad transition defense. Eric Gordon's great. I think Eric Gordon and Andre Iguodala are kind of the player you have to have if you're going to be great. Basically, former borderline all-star or all-star player that's now playing a different role and everybody forgets how great they are and then can't figure out why you win all the time. Like, Eric Gordon's great. But he's now a fringe piece of the puzzle. So there were just little tiny plays. But in a 104-101 game, I think little tiny plays are what separate your ability to win and then maybe advance. And I'm not sure with that our guys are there, that this group is there yet. I'm not purposely not getting into off-season, what do we need to add, all of that kind of stuff right now. Because I just don't think – well, I think there's two. I'll get into it a little bit right here in a second. But I just think we, frankly, unfortunately, have plenty of time. And, you know, maybe by tomorrow. Hope not. Hopefully we can go surprise and get one. I'll do that in my final note. I'm actually semi-organized today. It's making me uncomfortable. I'm watching last night's Portland-Houston game, or Portland-OKC game. And thankfully, Portland sounds like they're going to work their way to a win here if all goes well. They last year got swept. And they were the team that led to all the discussion of you can't have Dame and CJ together. And, you know, they've been swept back-to-back years. And maybe Terry Stotts isn't that great, which is just a joke. He's truly one of the great coaches in this league. And I don't know if anybody was blasting Neil O'Shea. Felt like he kind of got through it okay. But anyway, there was this kind of just ongoing discussion about everything about Portland. To some extent, we are last year's Portland. Portland last year got New Orleans in the first round. It was the team that matched up against them that they couldn't handle. Whereas had we gotten New Orleans, we would have beat them. And I think truly to this day, if we had played Portland, they would have beat us. We weren't very good at attacking, dropping bigs at that point in time. We got better this year. I actually think if we got Portland to that point, we would beat them right now because we would play Enes Kanter off the court. We play the pick and roll, handoff game, could have gotten Enes Kanter involved. Oklahoma City is not a particularly good pick and roll team. They have two of the most inefficient guards in the NBA, and so they can't exploit some of those weaknesses. And frankly, then Enes, who we can all make fun of all the time, but I actually think he has some value in this league, because the offensive rebounding is becoming more and more valuable. But my point on that is that he actually matches to the physical strengths of Steven Adams about as well as any center in the NBA. Right? But the Russell Westbrook, Steven Adams pick and roll is the least efficient pick and roll other than Reggie Jackson, Blake Griffin of the top 25 pick and rolls used in the NBA this year. So it's the second least efficient pick and roll of any pick and of those pick and rolls. And then Dennis Schroeder's not better. Dennis Schroeder and Nerlens Noel, which is their second unit, is the worst pick and roll other than Colin Sexton, Tristan Thompson, of any of the top 50 pick and rolls in the league. And so when they're playing a team that's dropping the big and trying to, you're going to have to beat and have a bad pick and roll, that's not the team that can exploit it. We play Portland and we would beat them right now. I'm certain of it. We would beat OKC too. We can't beat Houston. It's not happening. They're way better than us because our essence is that we're this pick and roll team. We have no ISO players. Whereas Portland actually has some half, there are very few good ISO players in the league, but Portland with Dame and CJ probably could get some mismatches and make some plays. Dame's actually not a very good pick and roll player. He and Donovan are about the same, frankly. So it's not, I'm not certain that that's the case because that's an area of Dame's game that actually is a little overrated. As much as I just am completely in the bag for Dame, let's be honest about him right now. That's not an area of his strength. CJ McCollum's a better one-on-one player. He's better, you know. But if you take, you know, you take the top 100 isolation players in the league, guys who've run the top 100 most common isolation players, the guys that are good are, you know, it's why San Antonio probably caused Houston problems because they just go let DeRozan play his ISO game. You know, we don't have that. Donovan is 77th out of the top 100 players offensively who run isolation. Jason Tatum, by the way, and Trey Lyles are the two worst. Just, I always think it's interesting that Jason Tatum, what everyone thinks is this great one-on-one player, is in there. He's actually not. It's hard. Isolation's really hard. Dame's 73rd in the league. Donovan's 77. So it's not, you know, that's just not a good, it's not a good gig for us. But to my point is I think we're last year's Portland. And Portland looks fine right now. And we'd look fine if we had that matchup. You know, we need more talent. There's no question. But that's not. Kyle Korver and his thoughts that were pretty awesome. And Gerald Green's thoughts about you next on Locked On Jazz. Make sure you follow the NBA Twitter account, Locked On NBA Net, Locked On NBA Net. That's the Twitter account. It's all of the Twitter feeds of all of our hosts on the Locked On Podcast Network, as well as we have an Instagram post that does this, is a great collection of what's going on at Locked On NBA Net. All right. If you did not hear about this scene, I was not there for it. Pretty awesome. So Kyle Korver finishes his media and then calls everyone back and has the following thing to say about his teammate, Donovan Mitchell.
I have never been around a young player like Donovan Mitchell. I have never seen someone so young take ownership of a team, take ownership of his play, do it with charisma, do it with class. I've never seen that in my 16 years in the NBA. And he missed a tough shot tonight, but it's just going to be part of his story. If you've played any meaningful basketball in the NBA, you have a shot like that. If you don't, that means you haven't played in meaningful games, or you haven't been trusted by your coaches or your teammates to take that shot. I don't care who it is in history. Everyone has a shot they want back. And this is going to just be part of the story at the end of the day. So I think, because of who he is, he's going to put too much on that shot. We miss free throws. We miss dunks. We miss layups. We miss threes. It was not about that shot. It was not about that shot. We had so many more chances to win that game. But I'm super proud of him. He came out and, like, he heard that he hadn't, played as well as he wanted to the first couple games. And he put the whole thing on his back, and he tried tonight. And for a young guy, 21 years old, whatever he is, that's really special. He is on a great path in this NBA. And at the end of the day, this is just going to be part of his story, part of his journey. And he's going to keep on building on it. So I just wanted to say that.
Donovan is just terrific. He's going to be great. His attitude is amazing. His approach is amazing. His game is improving. He's going to be great. And to a little bit of watching Oklahoma City and Portland last night, like, thank goodness, because Oklahoma City is beholden to a superstar who plays his way no matter what's going on, and they can't win with it. I mean, unless they're going to win three in a row, and I'm going to eat crow here, but they can't win with it. They're not good. They haven't. This is their third straight year. They're getting knocked out in the first round. Everyone's going to keep talking about how great they are. And it's because of Russ. And he's completely unbending, unwilling to play the game in a different fashion. If Billy Donovan gets fired, I'm just curious, like, who's willing to take that job? Because you can't do, like, Quinn couldn't run his stuff with Russ. I don't think he'd run it. You know, you got Donovan, you got Dame, you got these guys that are willing to run their stuff. Dame's not been perfectly quiet. He shouldn't be. It's pretty awesome. So Donovan, I mean, that's why the future's bright. The other one is, you guys were incredible. You guys were just totally incredible. I mean, that building was insane. It was as loud early as I remember it, and then to try to call a game, and it was hard. You guys were, it was mind-blowing how great you were last night, or 2 nights ago. Here's what Gerald Green, with a little backpedal in the middle, had to say about the fans.
Places to play. It's crazy, man. It's nice here, man. It's one of the cool places to play. You know, I love to play on the road, so this is one of the cool places to play in the NBA, man. These fans here are, well, they're not better than Houston fans, but, you know, never better, but they're loud, you know what I mean? Houston fans, we got swag, though.
All right, that leaves us with, our Game 5 thoughts. I'm going to leave it as this. It'd be great if our guys came out and put out amazing effort tonight. It'd be great if we won. I'd love to get on another plane. I'd miss my kid's ski banquet on Wednesday, which I never planned to go to in the first place. So I'm willing to do, that's fine, right? Like, I'd love to get on one more plane. I'd love to have one more dinner. I'd love to have one more day with the traveling crew that I enjoy so much. I'd love to get to watch these guys play. I was totally depressed all day yesterday. Probably am a little bit still today. And to that point, if they are, and they put out a dog tonight, I don't want to hear it. Like, they're human, guys. They gave every ounce of everything they had. They're down 3-0. It's insurmountable. Their intention, I 100% promise you, is to put out the best effort they possibly can tonight. But their breaking point is thin. And so, if they get run tonight, they get run tonight. And it just will not be, to me, a statement in any way, shape, or form about who they are, what they're about, what, anything of that sort. It would just be that they got run in a night where their breaking point was thin. If they can put out a fight tonight, be impressive. They can have the joy of playing together one more time since they like each other so much, and maybe two more times, maybe three more times. That'd be great. But I'm just not, honestly, as I go into this beforehand, like, I'm sure somebody, oh my God, there's nothing truly to be learned either way out of the sample size of tonight. We know who they are. We know our strengths. We know our weaknesses. We know what this team was. This team, I don't believe this team was ever built to win a championship this year. Unless I'm wrong, I apologize to Dennis and the crew if I just, you know, they weren't close to the Rockets or Warriors last year. I never thought they would be this year. I thought they'd be a 52-win team. They were 50. They were virtually there. I thought they had a chance for the 2 seed because I thought the rest of the West would fall back to them, which is basically what happened. It's really – and then they got to just – they got the Portland Trailblazer, New Orleans Pelicans first-round matchup. So to me, tonight – is a celebration game to watch them play one more time, and hopefully they put out an effort that lets us celebrate with them. That is Locked On Jazz. Thanks very much for tuning in. Locked On NBA, Josh Lloyd, biggest stories, local experts, always a good one to hear. On Mondays, Sam Amick and I believe are doing Thursday this week. We'll see Ben Golliver will be floating around somewhere on Locked On NBA, maybe even Trevor. So fun week heading as we continue with the playoffs, and hope all is good on your end. Jazz and the Rockets, Ron and I will be with you throughout the day. Have a good one.